California Medical Board has actually attacked a lot of different midwives, chiefly those giving home birth services, to the point that home birth has not been a possibility for women all over the state.
My attorney had said that there was no way I could win.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The fact is that the American way of birth is traumatizing most mothers and babies. That's the bottom line.
As soon as this visiting midwife discovered that she had a baby in the breech position, they referred her out of the practice with very little information. Oh, your baby's breech, we can't work with you anymore in our practice. She just felt disconnected and that nobody cared about her or for her.
It's important when we think about how women should give birth to sort of trust women, that women aren't just selfish ninnies who want to have birth outside of hospital. A lot of times they've come to that from hard experience. We need to realize that there are plenty of things that happen routinely in hospitals that the best evidence actually suggests, not just suggests, but actually says, are not really very safe for mothers and babies. We've been brainwashed. And I'd like to release more women from the brainwashing.
And all our lives we must struggle.
Why do virtually all American women give birth in hospitals? Is the medical model of assisting childbirth the best way to serve women and their babies? Why hasn't the United States, like other post-industrial countries with far better birth statistics, used the midwifery model of care? This is independent producer Carolyn Crane. Join me as part one of this two-part series defines midwifery as it is seen through the lens of a landmark 1999 California case in which Allison Osborne, licensed midwife, was brought to trial by the California Medical Board simply for practicing the world's real oldest profession. Midwifery. Allison Osborne begins our discussion with a background on the case. We'll call the woman, the mother-to-be, Sarah.
At 36 weeks, this woman called and said that her baby was breech and that she had been told she had to have a cesarean section, and could she come and see me? And I told her that I would be happy to see her, and she came up from Vallejo to hear. I talked to her about the fact that she could probably find a doctor that would do a vaginal breech birth, or she could go back to this doctor that had told her he was going to do a cesarean and beg for a vaginal breech delivery, or she could go to Alameda because I know of a doctor down there that attends vaginal breech births, and spent a couple hours with her because she was fairly devastated by the way that the information was given to her. Oh, you have to have a cesarean, she was told, and the doctor walked out. Schedule her, he told the nurse on his way out the door.
Babies in breech position descend the birth canal feet first or buttocks first. Sarah had received no information prior to this visit to the clinic that her baby was presenting breech.
She had been in a certified nurse midwife's care, and nobody had noticed that the baby was breech until a visiting certified nurse midwife came and saw her one day and said, your baby's breech. And then this whole emotional thing came down where she was going to have a cesarean. They scheduled it for the next Friday, even though she would then be 3 weeks early. It was traumatic to her while another person might be okay with it.
Was Sarah overreacting to the obstetrician's edict that she undergo a cesarean 3 weeks before her due date? Ina Mae Gaskin, midwife and co-founder of The Farm in Tennessee, is internationally known for her book Spiritual Midwifery. It concerns her that the cesarean section rate in the United States is well over 20%.
The World Health Organization has studied this and has set the levels that you really shouldn't rise above 10, or in the extreme case, 15%, because once you have more cesareans than 10 or 15%, you're actually causing death to a certain number of women. and that the real range should be somewhere around 10%. There are others in the world, you know, very respected people who scientists and who studied this, who say 7% would be probably the optimum level. Sometimes when you have C-section, when it's not necessary, you're going to endanger the woman's life and you're going to give her a chance of becoming physically impaired or ill afterwards. Lots of women after C-section do have pretty serious infections. And that also impacts on the baby because babies born after cesarean section are more apt to have wet lungs and to have breathing difficulties. Babies after C-section are sometimes cut accidentally. When you go through the uterine wall, sometimes they'll get the baby too. And we don't hear these things. So, you know, it's not a black and white good or bad scenario. And what you need to know then for the women is cesarean and interventions should really only be used when they're necessary so that the intervention itself doesn't become the thing that damages the baby. In the last 30 years or so, we've changed how we've dealt with breech birth in the United States, and it's a rare woman who has a breech birth in the natural way anymore. More often, these babies are delivered by cesarean.
Sarah knew that women in other cultures had successful vaginal deliveries of breech-presented babies. She sought to create a choice for herself, an alternative to undergoing surgery she believed was dangerous. Alison Osborne.
A week later, she called and said she wanted to come see me and she wanted to talk about doing a home birth. So she came up and I saw her and talked about the risks of vaginal breech birth and why people like to do breech births in the hospital and why they like to do them by cesarean section, and told her about my experience and my background with breeches. I was trained to do breeches, and she chose a home birth.
Suzanne Arms is an advocate and international spokeswoman for midwifery. Her 1977 book, Immaculate Deception, has become a feminist Bible for alternative birth.
Historically, whenever a woman has had the opportunity to choose a woman to be with her in birth, she has done so. Even if she preferred to have her husband with her as well, it has always been other women that birthing women, that pregnant women have turned to for care and support when it came to giving birth. These are the people they feel they can trust. These are the people they feel understand this unknown, mysterious process that they're going to embark upon, this huge rite of passage from girlhood to womanhood called birth.
Why was it so important for Sarah to attempt to avoid a cesarean section and to seek a place to birth her child that was supportive and under her control? Suzanne Arms.
I think it's important that people understand that there are two different models for the care of birthing women and babies in this country and around the world today. In fact, there are two different paradigms, and by paradigm I mean an entire philosophic approach, a systematic way of thinking, and ways of practice. The first is the medical paradigm, or the medical model, and the second is the midwifery paradigm, or the midwifery model. Let me describe the difference. The medical model is based on the belief that pregnancy and birth are medical conditions that must be cared for by highly trained physician surgeons in institutions, primarily in hospitals and in clinics. The paradigm of midwifery is a holistic paradigm. It recognizes the interconnection of mind, body, emotions, and spirit. It is a preventive model that understands that you can prevent far more problems than you can imagine by simply giving a woman the kind of emotional support, nutritional support, decent housing, and making her life as unstressed as possible when it comes to childbearing. Midwifery looks at the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual aspects of birth in the entire childbearing cycle, whereas medicine looks at birth as an event labor and delivery and everything that leads up to it and afterwards is a before or after labor and delivery. Midwifery understands that birth is a continuum and that the mother and baby are intrinsically paired as a bonded unit that must be cared for as a whole, together, that anything that affects the mother affects the baby, and that anything affects the baby affects the mother, and that paradoxically they are having both the same experience and uniquely separate experiences as individuals, because they are a symbiotic pair who need each other for their own development. Medicine believes that they're two separate and distinct creatures.
Ina May Gaskin explains that the mother-child connection is not merely psychological or emotional.
There's a very subtle interaction of the hormones in the baby's and the mother's system, and it's actually been shown that the mother is less likely to hemorrhage if the baby's on her skin. The baby nurses better and more easily if the baby's right with her. And if you separate the two, it also makes it more difficult for this good, easy interaction between the two to happen. And a lot of mothers will tell you they found a surer sense of how to respond to the baby's cues if there was no separation between the mother and the baby. So again, the midwifery model is built on the normal interaction that's always been there. And the medical model is derived from a sense that why not act as if things are already going to go wrong, since they might.
Aside from the sudden diagnosis of her baby's breech position, what had constituted Sarah's experience with the medical model at the Vallejo Clinic, where she'd been a patient? Allison Osborne.
It was a group of certified nurse midwives who serve Medi-Cal women who are on Medi-Cal. And they give them 5-minute visits, very much like the old doctor visits, or even today's doctor visits, but not what I would call quality midwifery care. And in fact, missed a breech up until she was 36 plus weeks pregnant. As soon as this visiting midwife discovered that she had a baby in the breech position, they referred her out of the practice with very little information. Oh, your baby's breech, we can't work with you anymore in our practice. She just felt disconnected and that nobody cared about her or for her. Nobody took the time to explain to her what her choices were or if she had a choice. She did ask the doctor if she could wait for the cesarean until her due date at least, and he told her no as he walked out the door.
Sarah's experience is sadly typical in the United States, where the medical model prevails. Other countries offer a different standard of care. Ina May Gaskin explains the standard of care in the Netherlands, which has one of the lowest infant and maternal mortality rates in the world, much lower than the United States, which ranks about 25th worldwide.
Well, the Netherlands is a small country that has a sort of a history of going its own way. It doesn't sort of always get swept along with what everybody else is doing. If the Dutch think they've got a better idea, they tend to kind of stick with it. And that's been very interesting when you look at childbirth, because the Netherlands is one country where, when other countries surrounding, and certainly what happened in North America, was that virtually all women went to hospitals to have their babies, Dutch women did not follow suit. They saw no reason to change what they considered a good thing, which was to have babies at home. And still 40% of Dutch women prefer to give birth at home. Now, of course, that means that their midwife comes to them, and it's midwives rather than physicians who attend the greatest percentage of births. There's also an individual who's there to help the midwife, who's, let's call her a midwife assistant, since we don't have really a total equivalent of that in our country. She's actually a kind of a nurse, and so she's there to assist the midwife during the birth and right afterward. And then she is paid to come back for the next 10 days The midwife makes some calls in the days following the birth as well, but this midwife assistant can be hired by the family for, say, 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day, or 8 hours a day, depending upon the family's need, at a rate that any family could afford. This is partly subsidized by the Dutch taxpayer. And what that midwife assistant does is she cleans the house, she gets the meals ready, she takes care of older children, she walks the dogs, she scrubs the floor, she gets the kids off to school. She's also able to give breastfeeding advice to the mother, breakfast in bed for the new parents. They get the royal treatment for the first 10 days of life. And the Dutch consider that this is so well worth it because this is the kind of preventive care that means that later on you don't have all the problems that develop in breastfeeding or people getting sick because they're overstressed in the time after childbirth. The Dutch, I think, are very wise to realize that that time of transition, if it's made easier for the new families, puts them on a sure road to effective parenthood, and there are fewer instances of women becoming ill or stressed, and you don't have the higher incidence of postpartum depression that can often happen when women, they don't have all of this social support.
Why hasn't this model of care been established in the United States? Suzanne Orms.
America is a very young country. We do not have the same tradition in the care of mothers and babies that most European countries, as well as the rest of the world, has. Ever since colonial times, American men have dominated childbirth for the majority of women. This has a peculiar historical reason. When Americans tried to get rid of their working class immigrant backgrounds, they often felt they needed to turn their back on the practitioners who came from their own communities and spoke their language and worked with their hands because they were considered lower class. And there was a great desire among immigrants to be part of the mainstream of middle class culture as it developed in America. America did not have its own medical schools, and so men, because in those days, in the 17th, 18th, 19th, even early 20th century, almost all physicians were men. Men went to Europe to train to be physicians, and it was a gentleman scholar profession, much more than a surgical specialty. And the people who came back from that training had a particular status in society that elevated them above the woman giving birth, even if the woman giving birth was of their own class. This is very important to understand because in all other cultures in the world, midwifery was an unbroken tradition from time immemorial. Women have always been the ones who assisted their sisters, their friends, their village companions in birth.
It was this tradition that caused Sarah to retreat from the medical model that she felt had abandoned her. Within days, she relocated in Nevada County in order to have a home birth there with Osborne in attendance. When she went into labor, Osborne and Cindy Foxfoot, then Osborne's apprentice, attended the birth of a baby girl we'll call Emma, Allison Osborne.
We went out to her house and had a normal labor and a normal pushing stage with a baby in great condition. And my last documented heartbeat, which was normal, was at 10:49. And at 10:54, the baby was born 5 minutes after the last fine heartbeat and was unresuscitable. Later, I figured that the baby had a cord accident, that as the baby came out butt first, it compressed its cord either between the hip and the pelvic bones or between its knees and its chest, that it somehow crimped off its own oxygen supply. And I was unable to resuscitate the baby. We called 911 and they came out and took the baby into the hospital, and the parents and I followed, and my partner, then apprentice. And at the hospital, they wouldn't let us see the baby until the sheriffs questioned the parents and questioned us separately. And someone made a complaint to the medical board to investigate this.
In the weeks that followed baby Emma's death, Foxfoot moved in with Sarah and her husband to be near them and support them during the grieving process. Osborne visited them daily. Surely a question that preoccupied them was, would Emma have died if they delivered in a hospital by cesarean section? Ina Mae Gaskin.
You know, one of the best-kept secrets is that in the United States, babies die every day in hospitals, but we don't know about it. That fact is pretty much hidden from us. So people, you know, when a baby dies in a home birth, it can often become front-page news, and it can even become national news. Some babies die from birth from causes that nobody could turn around. There are things that can go wrong with birth that, you know, no matter how much technology and drugs and so on and so forth, you're not going to change that outcome. Sometimes you can delay it. What happens is we're not given the straight story. And when the perception then is that one way of giving birth is 100% safe and another is not, then women aren't making their decisions based upon full information.
Emma's death did not become front-page news in the twin cities of Grass Valley and Nevada City, where Osborne and Foxfoot practiced. The baby's death did, however, immediately attract the interest of local law enforcement, as well as California's medical board. Allison Osborne.
The local district attorney didn't see fit to take an action against me for manslaughter. One of the benefits of becoming licensed in California is that when there's an issue, just like if a doctor has a death, the doctor doesn't get taken for criminal action. The medical board may or may not investigate a death that a doctor may have, but there's not a criminal action taken. So all I had was a license administrative action against me.
This action was the medical board's attempt to revoke Osborne's license, making it illegal for her to practice midwifery.
Well, I think Allison's case was really important because she was actually in this enormous struggle that went on for a year, at least, with the medical board of California. And California medical board has actually attacked a lot of different midwives, chiefly those giving home birth services, to the point that home birth has not been a possibility for women all over the state, even though California is the state really where that movement began 30 or so years ago. California law provides for physician supervision. The problem with that is that not all midwives can find a physician who will agree to provide that. That was what Allison sought and was not able to find a doctor who would enter into a formal relationship with her.
My attorney wanted to settle my action without a trial because it would cost over $30,000 to take it to trial. So we were close to determining an agreement, and the medical board wouldn't accept the attorney general and my attorney's agreement as to a settlement. I felt that that was a spiritual intervention because I really wanted to fight it. I didn't feel that I had done something wrong. I didn't feel that something happened that I failed to notice during this labor or during this birth, or that I didn't do a good resuscitation effort, or that I shouldn't have taken this woman on. I didn't feel any of that, so I wanted to go to trial. But the expense and the scariness of going to trial and having a decision handed down that could really penalize me further than this settlement offer was frightening. So anyway, we went into trial, and it was a week-long hearing, and it was actually rather a sacred event. Judge Jaime Roman from the administrative law offices in Sacramento seemed to actually really listen to what was being said in a way that he put together a ruling that was beyond anything anybody could have dreamed. My attorney had said that there was no way I could win if we went into hearing, that I needed to settle, that there was no way that I could win because of the supervision issue.
At the time of Emma's death, California law required that each licensed midwife be supervised by a physician.
I don't have a physician supervisor. No physician will supervise a midwife who does home births. That is a key point. There's 120 licensed midwives in the state of California, and there are zero who have physician supervisors. Physicians have been told by their malpractice insurers that they may not supervise midwives who attend home births and women who are choosing home birth, that they may not see them. Malpractice insurance companies have told the doctors this. The woman had had her own doctor who had managed the case up to that point, which makes a big difference in attending an unusual circumstance birth. In an unusual circumstance birth, you want a sonogram that determines that the baby's safe and doesn't have anomalies or birth defects that would cause the breech position in the first place and the like. So through these records, I could see that this woman had a background that was solid. There was an implied care that she had been in with a physician that I felt comfortable with. My action had several counts of not having a physician supervisor. And so what we demonstrated in this week in court was that there were no such thing as physician supervisors for home birth midwives, and in fact, that the midwifery model was different than the medical model in that we don't practice the same practice. People attending home births have a different set of guidelines of practice and standards of care than the medical model. We were so successful in demonstrating this to the judge that he ruled that the midwifery model and the medical model are two different things, and he excused the testimony. He summarily dismissed the testimony of the expert witnesses for the medical board, a doctor and two certified nurse midwives with hospital practices, from making expert testimony as to whether I followed the standards of care for midwives. And he said that the experts that I brought in all said that my actions were defendable within the language of our law and within the guidelines of practice of midwives.
This concludes part one of Understanding Midwifery, a Case in Point. Carolyn Crane, producer. Dawn Fisher, editor. For further information, email carolyncrane@kvmr.org. This program was produced at DigiGirl Studios in Grass Valley, California, in cooperation with KVMR-FM, Nevada City, California, through a grant from the KVMR Radio National Production Fund, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
On the next Wings, hear the conclusion of Midwifery, a Case in Point.
I've seen a lot of change in New Zealand. And a lot of it was because the women who wanted home births were active enough.
We are going to have to politicize the issues and bring them to the attention of not only midwives, but the American public, that this is a political issue. This is a public health crisis.
To order a CD or cassette of the two-part series, Midwifery, A Case in Point, send $15 to Wings, Box 33220, Austin, Texas, 78764, USA. For more about Wings, check our website, www.wings.org, or email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local radio station, Women's Word, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange, and the booklet 36 Steps to a Gift Economy. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. Photographic logo by Ann P. Meredith. I'm Frieda Worden, executive producer. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.